The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begin.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
Welcome everybody out there in ARFCOM land. This is Radio Free ARFCOM. I'm your host, John Gold, brought to you by AR15.com, home of the Black Rifle and all things tactical. We have a good show on tap for you today. We're going to talk about several different things. We're going to start out, of course, with Joe DeBurgolese. We've got an economist coming on, Nathan Martin. He's going to talk about the situation the economy's in and what we can do to help fix our national economy, not just your own individual economic situation, but things that we personally can do to help fix the national economy. We've got Tim from Old Grouch Military Surplus going to come on and talk to us about the surplus business. We've got a very special get-to-know, one of the gorgeous ladies of ARFCOM, agreed to be with us on Get to Know, Fem Gun Girl, so you'll be looking forward to that a little bit later in the show. We're also going to have Brent Gardner come on from NRA ILA Grassroots and talk to us about how we can get involved in grassroots things to help our right to keep and bear arms where it is today and even better than where it is today. And we'll close out the show with a very special interview. Matt Hoffman, Going Galt, has a very special interview that you do not want to miss. So, that being said, let's get straight in with Joe DeBurgolese. He's our resident NRA board member. His screen name on AR15.com is Direct Action. And, Joe, are you there?
Hi, John. How are you?
Doing outstanding. How was your weekend?
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, my friend.
That's good to hear. Now, we have the NRA board elections coming up soon. Is that correct?
We do. They're in the process is undergoing right now.
Oh, they are going on right now. Okay. Now, if you're an NRA member, how do you go about casting your ballot, or how does that work?
Sure. In order to be eligible to vote, you need to be an annual member of at least 5 consecutive years or more, or a life member. The ballot is paper. It will have appeared already in your NRA magazine of choice in the March edition. So everybody should be either have it in their mailboxes by now, or by surely have them by the end of the month.
Okay. And then on the ballot, there's just, what is it, you can vote for X amount of people, or how does it work?
Currently, there's 31 eligible people, all great prospects, 25 of which have been nominated by the nominating committee established within the NRA. All the names are listed. There's biographies that go with each one, which are enumerated in the magazine of choice. I encourage everyone to read through the entirety of those biographies and then make your selections.
Okay. Now, at AR15.com, AR15 has some members that they endorse personally, and I want to talk about each of these guys. There's 6 of them, and I just kind of want to go over what you know about each individual AR15-endorsed candidate for the NRA board.
Sure.
Okay. Let's start out with Tom King.
Tom King is a dear friend of mine. He's president of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. He's a longtime serving member of the National Rifle Association board. He's a Black Rifle aficionado, 50 caliber shooter. He's basically one of the driving forces in New York and one of the main reasons why we've been so successful with the legislative agenda.
Okay, that's great. Now, for everybody who doesn't know, go to the General News and Announcements Forum on AR15.com. Goat Boy put up a thread there called NRA Board Endorsements for 2010. These are the members that are running for NRA positions that AR15.com is endorsing. Let's talk about Pete Brunell.
Well, the name is synonymous with the company. Pete is one of the up-and-coming movers and shakers in the firearm industries. Pete is an avid owner, builder, and shooter of the AR platform. If you go to Brownell's website, you'll see how to build an AR-15, which is an innovation of his. So you can actually go there and place certain parts, certain different manufacturers and brands together so you can see what your finished product would be. That was the ingenuity of Pete. And he'd be a great asset to the board.
Okay. Moving down the list, let's talk about Lance Olson.
Lance, again, another longtime board member. Lance is from the great state of Iowa. He's currently serving as a police detective out in that area on a task force. He's a former police chief, longtime NRA instructor. He's very intuitive and very, he's a great master gunsmith. He's a collector. He's one of these people that we go to when we want to know about various aspects of a wide variety of firearms. He loves a black gun. He's out there shooting with it. He's got a lot of insight into the military and military, and he's an asset to the board.
Outstanding. We've got some really good candidates, it sounds like, this year.
We do.
Let's talk about Dwight Van Horn.
Dwight Van Horn, another police officer. He's a retired sheriff's deputy out of California, currently residing in Idaho. He is now over in Iraq serving our country as a contractor in the firearms forensics examination. He is very well known in that field. He is doing great work with our troops over there now. He will be at the annual meeting. But he is somebody that if you go and shoot, if there's law enforcement officers listening who compete in the National Police Shooting Championships, he's our chief referee out there. Fantastic man, another great asset to the board.
Okay, outstanding. He sounds like he has a very interesting job over there in Iraq.
He truly does, and he's making a difference. I can't really go into what he's doing, but I'm just proud to be his friend. And at this stage in his life, going over there for about a year and a half commitment is a testament to his patriotism.
Okay, let's talk about someone that many people may have heard of because he worked in the Bush administration, Joe Alba.
Joe Alba is a great man. I first known Joe back after the 9/11 attacks in my home state here of New York. He was the one who orchestrated our response as the head of FEMA under President Bush. He's an advocate of the Second Amendment. He's the chairman of the Grassroots Committee. He's somebody that he wears it as tall as he is. He wears his allegiance on his sleeve with the NRA and all things Second Amendment. He's also a crack shot with the AR platform, and he's mover and shaker within the NRA.
Okay, outstanding. The last person on the AR15.com endorsed list is Richard Childress. What do you know about Richard?
Well, other than he's a great man and became good friends, Richard came on the board with me this past year. We're freshman board members together, and he's, for all his namesake and his renown, his affiliation with Dale Earnhardt Sr. and his racing prowess, he's a down-to-earth good person. He's a hunter. He goes on a variety of hunts throughout the country and the world a bit. And he's somebody that knows and understands the Black Rifle. He's an advocate for it. He's just a good, down-to-earth person who understands what his roots are and understands the value of the NRA in this country.
Outstanding. Now, there was one well, before I get to that,
sure.
We need to vote for you as well. Is that right?
No, unfortunately, we run for three-year terms.
Oh, okay.
Last year, I was the NRA nominating committee choice. I was also ARFCOM's endorsed candidate, the first time that ever happened. And so I run in another 2 years.
Okay. Now, there was one candidate that was not on the endorsed list, but that you feel is a good representative for owners of Black Rifles and for the AR platform. That's Graham Hill. Can you tell us a little bit about Graham?
Grant Mills is a great man. He's one of our advocates up there on the Hill. He's a lobbyist by trade, shooter extraordinaire. He is somebody who understands 50 caliber straight on down. He hunts. He's somebody that we go to when we want to get a main understanding on certain legislation that's pushing forward. He works hand in hand with Chris Cox and his great folks over in Iowa. He's somebody particular to what we need as an up-and-coming board member.
Now, just so everybody knows, it's important that we get these candidates in these positions that are pro-black rifle, because in the past there hasn't been that many proponents for the black rifle and AR platform in these positions. We get these guys in these positions, and it can only further our cause, correct?
That's true. Well, let me just say this, John. Every person that's on that ballot, all 31 of them, have shown their advocacy for Second Amendment in a variety of shooting disciplines, sports, and firearms that are out there. That's why I say to everybody, take an opportunity to read through the biographies and choose. There's some very good people out there. And these individuals that we spoke about today are but a few of the people that are out there to represent you. These are ones particular to our cause. But each and every one, and I go to board meetings and committee meetings and what have you. If you would see, and we mentioned this last week, the NRA has taken a measured step in the right direction to include the AR platform in everything we do. And we're going that way with a variety of shooting disciplines we're going to be bringing to bear, and unfortunately I can't announce it yet. But a lot of good things we're doing, but if you look at any of our magazines, any of our publications, any of our website features, they're constantly pushing forward our love of the black rifle.
I love it. Now, I have a question for you. If, say, someone is not a member of the NRA right now, and they wanted to vote in this election, if they became a lifetime member now, would they still be able to vote in this election?
No, sir. I believe that there's a time frame which that is available, but I believe that time frame is closed.
Okay. So the deadline is missed, but I encourage everybody, if you are a member, a voting member of the NRA, please cast your ballot this year. It's very, very important. Once again, you can go to the general section, news and announcements. Their Goat Boy has a post called NRA Board Endorsements for 2010. It's got all the AR15.com endorsed candidates. You need to make sure you vote for those guys first and foremost. And then, like Joe said, read through the profiles of each of these guys and cast your ballot and make a good informed decision on it. Now, one thing I wanted to just quickly touch on, McDonald arguments were last week. How long do we have until the McDonald case gets a ruling on it? Is there a typical time frame here?
It depends on the justice and when they want to come down with their decision. We're hearing sometime in June.
Oh, all the way until June, huh?
Until June, yes, sir.
Okay.
Now, I'll be the first one to post anything we hear, John. I'll post it on the thread.
Outstanding. And then just so everybody knows, I will have a lawyer on next week, an attorney, a real-life attorney. He's going to talk about the transcript. He's got a copy of the transcript and read through it of all the argument. He's going to kind of go over that with all of us. So we have that to look forward to next week. Hey, Joe, we're out of time for you today. I really appreciate you coming on every week and doing the job you do there on the NRA Board of Directors for us.
Thank you, John. Have a great show.
All right. We'll talk to you later. That was Joe DeBurgelace, our resident NRA Board Director, the first AR15.com endorsed candidate for the NRA Board of Directors. Let's get right into it. First thing I wanted to say before we go to our next guest is there's a couple of really interesting threads today on AR15.com in general discussion. The first one that I thought was really interesting was Man Wins Judgment After Open Carry Gun Arrest. Now, the title of the thread isn't 100% accurate, but just go read the thread, read the link to the story, voice your opinion there on the thread, what you think about it. Man Wins Judgment After Open Carry Gun Arrest. It was about a man in Wisconsin who got arrested. There's a whole bunch of background story to it. I'll let you guys read it, and you guys can make your decisions about that. The other thread that I thought was interesting, and I know it's going to generate a lot of talk on the website, is the Mexicanization of American Children. That's the title of the thread. It's in general discussion. Mexicanization of American Children. Go take a look at that thread and tell me what you think about it. With that being said, let's get straight to our next guest. He's an economist and an author of the book Flight to Financial Freedom, Nathan A. Martin. Nate, how are you doing?
Very good, John. Thank you.
It's great to have you on. Would you prefer I call you Nathan, or would you prefer I call you Nate?
It doesn't matter. Call me whatever you like.
Because I have heard a couple of interviews where the interviewer was calling you Nate, and I just didn't. I'll probably call you Nathan, though.
Sure. Most people do.
Okay. Anyway, before we get started in the interview, anybody who has a question for Nathan, feel free to call any of the numbers there on the BBS number page, or you can send me an IM through the website, through AR15.com. Send me an instant message. I'll be checking those throughout the interview, and I'll try to get your question on as soon as I can. Or if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, go ahead and post a question there on my wall, on the Radio Free ARFCOM wall on Facebook, and I will try to get your question into Nathan. So, Nathan, let's talk a little bit about your background in economics.
Sure.
How did you get started? What made you get so involved in economics and eventually write your book?
Well, I've been in business my entire life. I was in the U.S. Air Force, actually, for 15 years as a pilot. So while I was flying both in the Air Force and also in the airlines, I owned several businesses at the same time, actually. I owned and invested in commercial and residential real estate. And so I also have a degree in business, a master's degree in management and business, and I've just been interested in it my whole life and have followed it. My parents are both entrepreneurs, and so I've stayed attuned to it, and I've been an investor and been in touch with the markets the whole time. And I started writing about the economy back in about 2004, 2005, when I started to notice that valuations in the real estate market were just getting really obscene. The rent to income ratios were beyond historic norms. And that was really my tip that, it was getting way beyond a normal range. And at that point, I started selling out of all my rental real estate. And now I'm no longer a property owner at all. In fact, I rent the house that I live in. I sold my primary residence. I own no real estate. I got out of all of it just prior to the peak. And I've been playing with the markets and writing about the markets and kind of warning people about the bad math of the economy for quite some time.
Oh,
I started at a seminar company where I developed a program and was teaching people about, some of the underlying dynamics of the economy. Pretty similar to Chris Martinson's Crash Course, if you've heard of that.
I'm not familiar with that, no.
Mm-hmm. It's a real good thing. If you look at chrismartinson.com, he's got what's called the Crash Course, and he talks about some concepts like peak oil and demographics, and it's just a real good presentation to bring people who aren't real familiar with the underlying fundamentals of the economy. He did a real good job with it. Very similar to what I taught.
Mm-hmm. One thing we talk about here on ARFCOM Radio is people that don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk, and it sounds like that's what you've done. You actually invested. You were part of the markets. You were part of the real estate boom and the bubble that came up, and you know from firsthand, hands-on experience, the situations we're in. It's not just theoretical in your case. One thing I do want to say, Nathan's blog is economicedge.blogspot.com. There's a lot of really good information there. You've posted some stuff on there it's mind-blowing once you get into it. And let's talk about, before we can talk about kind of the current problems that we've got, can we talk kind of about how we got into these problems and the issues economically that brought us into the problems that we're facing now?
Oh, yes. Well, really, you have to go all the way back and talk about the history of money throughout time. And people who fail to do that, people who just look at the modern history of money, will fail to recognize what is happening. People like Ben Bernanke, who is a student of the Great Depression, he needed to study his history a little further back, and then he would have understood a little bit more about what he had to contend with. And I don't think he understands what he's doing at all. In fact, I think he's damaging the economy. What happened is in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, and that was really a tragedy because what it did was it turned over – the control of our money system, the power to make money, which is in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, the power to coin money belongs to Congress. And Congress turned that power over to a group of private central bankers in as a part of that Federal Reserve Act. And mind-blowingly, they started issuing a treasury debt for deficits in this country, and basically every penny, every dollar of our money system, it comes into being as somebody's debt. So if there's no money without debt, and since all money is debt, you can't pay it back. You just simply can't. If you pay back debt, then you lower the supply of money, and that becomes an anchor around the economy. And all the interest that's generated on all of that, of course, gets spun back to the central bankers. So we're, in effect, we're paying hundreds of billions of dollars a year for the privilege to use the people's own money system. And that's really the root of the problem. From the most fundamental basics. And then we can talk about derivatives and over leverage and all that stuff. But really, it's all a symptom of the required never-ending growth that was created by the Federal Reserve Act.
So, oh, go ahead.
No, that's, you know, I could talk about it for hours, but in a nutshell, that's the whole thing.
You brought up derivatives, and a lot was made about derivatives during the crash, 2008 crash. Can you tell, I'm a piker when it comes to economics. My eyes just start glazing over when I try to read some economic stuff. And what exactly, for the average person, what is a derivative, and how did those effects have such a negative effect on the economy?
Well, a derivative is really just it's a piece of paper that represents some underlying asset or not even an asset, could just be a bet on the direction of, say, interest rates or many other things. There are many different forms of derivatives. In general, though, what really got us into the initial trouble, everybody's heard of the subprime and how mortgages were rolled into tranches of derivatives. So those are securitized debt-backed derivatives where banks rolled all the loans into pools. They chopped them up in little bits, and then they sold them off to unwitting investors who weren't aware that they were buying substandard, non-traditional credit type of instruments. And the bottom line, though, the big picture is that the central bankers needed derivatives in order to press more debt into the system. The central bankers are our nation's and the world's debt pushers. I call them debt pushers. They are worse than drug dealers. They cause more damage and more havoc around the world than any gangster or any drug dealer possibly could. But derivatives was their attempt to squeeze more and more debt into the economy. And what they've been so successful at it, that they've done such a superb job of indebting our nation, indebting our states, indebting our corporations, indebting all the individuals, that the math simply doesn't work. The income cannot possibly mathematically pay back all that debt. And so we're reaching the mathematical end of our current dollar version. And by the way, there have been five versions of the dollar, of the U.S. dollar, throughout history. So, you know, to say that the dollar, the current version of it, is going to come to an end doesn't mean the world's going to come to an end. It just means that we're going – the rules are about to change, and there's big change coming because of that.
Okay, so – as you're saying, the current dollar system is reaching a critical mass stage. So what if no changes are made and we continue if no changes are made and we continue on the same path that we're going now, that we've gone for the last almost 100 years now, what do we have in store for us?
Well, the math is so bad now that if you look at government spending, it's on a what what's called a parabolic blow-off trajectory. It's headed straight up. What's really important is the amount of income, the amount of money that you take in versus how much debt you have. So it's your income that's required to service debt. In our nation, we take in right now, we used to take in nearly $2.6 trillion a year in taxes and other forms of income for our nation. But that has fallen off a cliff. And so our income, because the economy is saturated with debt and really cannot grow because of debt saturation. Because of that, our income is crashing, and now it's all the way down to about $2.2 trillion a year. And yet, at the same time that our income is crashing, our government spending is ramping to the moon, and now we're spending, last year we spent about $3.6 trillion, and this is just the on-the-book stuff that they admit to, which left us $1.4 trillion short just in 1 year. And so what happened is we're in a parabolic growth phase in government spending. The government spending is compensating for the fall off in consumers. I don't call them consumers. I call them citizens. We're all citizens. We're not consumers. But we get treated as if we're consumers by the debt pushers who continue to tell us that they need to get more credit flowing and more debt flowing because that's where their profits are. And really, it's just on a tragic path to nowhere. The income cannot support the debt. And we're in a divergence where our income is falling and our debt has gone parabolic. And so what will happen is at some point it will force the government to cut back on spending. And because government spending is the only thing holding the economy up right now, once the funding for the government gets cut off, then you will wind up with an economy where the debt tries to clear itself. And when the debt tries to clear itself, as debt goes away, since that's our money supply, then our money supply goes down. And basically, we're in a darned if we do and a darned if we don't situation. We shoot ourselves in the foot if we go into debt to stimulate the economy, and we shoot ourselves in the foot if we cut back on our spending. Either way, it's just not a good situation. And it's all because of the Federal Reserve Act signed in the year 1913, and because it does not follow the concepts that our founding fathers put forth in the Constitution.
Wow. You paint a pretty bleak picture. Now, as you say, the debt, our economy is based on debt, and we're printing up money. We've got more government expenditures than we're taking in tax revenue. Does that mean when it does finally crash or whatever, what does that mean? Does that mean the stock market crashes, the dollar crashes? What does that mean exactly?
Well, there are still choices to be made in that regard. And so forecasting the future from this point forward becomes difficult because you don't know what their reaction is going to be. They can choose to destroy our currency by printing money without debt, okay, by changing the rules. And this is what they've been doing piecemeal. In fact, we've been undergoing what I call piecemeal default. That's when you do things like quantitative easing, where the Federal Reserve issues debt and then buys it back themselves. That's just money printing, and actually it's worse than that because it leaves us with debt and interest that's on the books, but really no benefit from it other than it devalues our money. Money is a game of confidence. And so at some point when everybody realizes that that the math is as bad as it really is, and I can prove that the math is as bad as I say it is about six different ways, when enough people realize that, then they will lose confidence. And that's already happening worldwide. You've got all kinds of debt-driven, confidence-lacking things that are rippling around the world right now, and you're seeing it not just in the U.S., you're seeing it all over the world. Greece, Dubai, Spain, Portugal, Iceland, they're all saturated with debt. And so the whole world really, the money system around the world is going to change. And my warning for everybody is that if the central bankers have their way, the same central bankers that run and created this horrid system in the United States would like to indebt the rest of the world with their money. What they do is they lend money to countries, and then they only accept gold in return. So they make money from nothing and they accept gold in return. It's pretty ironic, and it's pretty much just a criminal activity from my point of view.
Sounds like modern day alchemy.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely.
Now, you'd think you've got these brilliant guys, you know, these are supposed to be some of our top economic minds running these banks, that you'd think they would be able to see see it for what it's worth and see that this is an unsustainable model that we're on.
They have been trained into ignorance. Our top schools in the United States teach total myth and false beliefs. The whole Keynesian concept, it's not even what Keynes said, actually, where they create fiat money. And if you listen to these people, they'll tell you that the national debt doesn't matter, which is just the funniest thing ever. What they fail to do is get out a basic calculator and add up all the debt and divide it by the people who are responsible to pay the debt back, and to do the comparison of income to debt. They don't want to do the comparison because our whole system is based on the system growing, that never-ending growth requirement. And mathematically, that exponential growth is something that humans have a real hard time conceptualizing. But when you hear numbers like, you know, 3% inflation, it sounds benign, but the truth is 3% inflation can cut the value of your money in half in just two and a half decades, really. So, you know, even 1% inflation in a century will kill the value of a currency. The bankers know the system. They know the flaws of the system. What they're doing is they're doing anything they can to keep it going so that they can create more fees and skim more interest from the productive efforts of the citizens of the United States. There is absolutely no reason for our money to be backed by debt. Our money absolutely should be issued as a sovereign note of the U.S. government. There should be no debt behind it, and thus we should have no interest expense that we're paying to private bankers in order for the privilege to use our own money. It's crazy when you think about it. It's nuts.
So you've got people like Ron Paul who say, what we need to do is we need to audit the Fed. Now,
yes.
Is that something that needs to be done, and or does the Fed just need to go away completely?
The Fed needs to go away completely. The Fed absolutely needs to go away completely. Ron Paul is correct that the Fed needs to be audited. However, it would simply be the tip of the iceberg. And the truth is that if you really want it to do a good job of auditing, you would start in what are known as the primary dealers. These are the commercial banks who buy our debt from the Treasury. They're the ones who are required, when nobody else will buy our debt, which is really about where we are right now. No sane person would buy debts of the United States.
And we've actually had some failed bond auctions. Is that correct?
Well, no, that's not correct. In
the United
States, there technically can't be a failed bond auction because in the Federal Reserve Act, the primary dealers are required to buy our bonds.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. It's a joke. Okay. And what are they going to use to buy our bonds with? Okay. They just create money from nothing and do it. Okay. It's a giant game of hide and seek. The whole Federal Reserve System and the private ownership trail of the private individuals that own that bank. The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. It is a group of private bankers. And because they make and control the money of the United States, they have bought our politicians and they have become the fourth branch of government and subverted all the issues. And, you know, I know AR-15 is, you know, you guys our NRA and talking about the Second Amendment rights and all that stuff. And all these issues are interrelated. And the money issue, the power that the bankers have, they take a lot of the other issues like Second Amendment issues and First Amendment, Fifth Amendment issues. They take all these other issues and they divert attention from what they're doing. But the bankers are the ones who are the puppet masters. They're the ones putting money into the political campaigns and pulling the strings to make all these little sideshows happen and to take the focus off of them. But they are the root of the problem in the United States. And if you want to fix a lot of these other issues that concern groups, if you want a fair tax system, if you want whatever your issue is, it really, in order to get the politicians in a position where they can do it, what you have to do is you have to separate that central banker and the special interest money that influences politics in the United States. You have to separate the two. Then you can stand a chance at getting your issue taken care of.
Okay. Now, before I talk about the Swarm USA project, I just want to talk a little bit more about this, about what Ron Paul said about auditing the Fed. There's some things that Ron Paul says I really agree on. He's got other issues that I disagree on. But as far as the Fed is concerned, if we audited the Fed and opened up the books for everyone, do you think that would provide impetus and it would open people's eyes and go, oh my goodness, what is going on here? Or do you think it would just be just a dog and pony show?
Well, it's already a dog and pony show. Just like the stress test was for the banks. Do you remember that?
I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. Well, at the height of the financial crisis in 2008, their way of showing confidence.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I do remember that. Yes.
Okay. Right. They developed these procedures. Oh, we'll stress test the banks.
Right.
What a joke. They just make the rules. The bankers write the test so that they can pass it. And so the Federal Reserve, I can guarantee you this, if the Federal Reserve allows themselves to be audited, and they won't, but if they do, then it will be a joke. A serious audit, as I was beginning to explain, would start at the primary dealers. It would run through the Federal Reserve into the Treasury, and then it would run through all the subsidiaries of the commercial banks, and then it would go outside of the United States into the IMF, and it would look at the swaps that we're doing internationally with other countries, and it would be a mess. And the Federal Reserve, if the people knew what they were really doing, the Federal Reserve would be gone in an instant. They will not open their books for you to see.
Okay, one thing I like about you is you're not just an economist who just talks about the problems and tells everybody about the problems we have, but you actually have proposed a solution. And the website I want everyone to go check out if you get a chance is www.swarmusa.com. Can you tell us a little bit about the Swarm and what it's intended to do and where we can go from here?
Absolutely. Even I had trouble seeing how we could get out from under the bad math. And what it dawned on me is that the box that's being presented by the central bankers and by the left and the right in the politics, there is no solution within their box of debt-backed money. And I watched a film made by a guy named Bill Still. He made a film that won Best Documentary of 2009, by the way. It's called The Secret of Oz.
Yeah, I've heard about that, but I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, it's a good view, and I would highly recommend everybody watch it. It will entertain you while at the same time teaching you about the history of money and open your mind to some possibilities. The most important possibility that really changes the whole dynamic is if our federal government, instead of backing our money with debt, simply issues money and spends it into the economy instead of backing it with debt. That single act alone makes many of the problems that our country faces economically, it makes them go away. But what it would do is it would wrest control from the central bankers who are in control of the money, and it would return it to Congress, who is given the power to coin money. And that's exactly what needs to happen. And so that's the foundation of Freedom's Vision, which is a plan that I developed. It's a multifaceted plan that would go in and it would take out a lot of the debt, and it would clean out a lot of the derivatives to repair people's balance sheets. And one of the ways that it would benefit people is that we would refund your last 2 years worth of federal tax money, or $7,000 minimum per tax exemption. We would simply refund that, and we would apply it to consumer credit in order to pay down debt. We would create state chartered banks where the states, instead of having to borrow money from private investors and from private central bankers, and which gives the banks control and power over the states, if all the states were to have state chartered banks, they could actually lend money for projects at little or no interest, and it would turn that money equation back to work for the people. So instead of the people paying private people to borrow their own money, what happens is then it gets rid of that negative interest thing over time. And furthermore, what it would do is it would target 0% price inflation. And so by ending the concept that prices of things always have to go up, by creating price stability and targeting 0% inflation, you're $300,000 house today would be worth $300,000 20 years from now, 40 years from now. It would still be the same amount. And what that does is it changes the bad math on all these problems that we're facing with Social Security, with Medicare, all these other problems. When you take the never-ending growth component, that exponential math compounds on itself. When you get rid of that, all at once those programs start to number out, and then there starts to appear solutions that are actually possible. Nobody can talk about solutions to Social Security or Medicare or to the mortgage crisis in this country. They can't do it because the math doesn't work. Hey, I've been watching it for, three decades, and everybody's known these problems are coming. They can't do anything about it because they're trapped in a debt-based box. And so Freedom's vision would end all of that. It would replace the Federal Reserve Act with some language that would basically do what the Constitution says and return control of the people's money to them.
So in order for that to happen, that's going to have to be an act of Congress, correct?
Yes, it would have to be an act of Congress. However, we're crafting it in such a way that it would not have to be a constitutional amendment. And so in order to get Congress to separate themselves from special interests, of course, what congressman wants to end debt-backed money, because those central bankers feed them. That's how our system works. That's why political campaigns are now multi millions of dollars in order to run one. And so who wants to cut that money off? And so the swarms are designed to pressure the politicians into supporting the provisions, the act, of Freedom's vision, instead of maintaining the status quo. And so what we see is a bunch of disjointed groups out there. We have the Tea Party, we have the 9/12 organization, we have this little group and that little group, and they're kind of all unfocused, and they're not really – they know bad stuff is going on, but they're not really seeing the roots of the problem. Well, this is the root of the problem, and nothing really gets fixed until this does. And so the swarms are our attempt to get people to, instead of saying, hey, sign this petition, or hey, everybody, write your congressman and tell them to support Freedom's vision, those types of movements have very poor success rates. And what we've discovered is that what's way more effective is if we all coordinate. And so instead of you writing your representative and me writing my representative, let's say everybody in the country, all in a coordinated effort on the same day, we get thousands of people to write in and fax in and phone in and persuade your representative all on the same day to back Freedom's vision, and you put them on the spot that way. You say, look, the swarm is going to keep bugging you until you agree to support freedom's vision. When you agree to support it, then the swarm is going to go to work for you. We're going to work our darndest to get you elected. We're going to try to bring you financing. So we're going to try to turn the whole model upside down and put politicians on the spot. And so again, that's way out of the box. We know that what we're proposing would never happen from within the box, from within the Republican Party or within the Democratic Party, or even to create an independent third party. Very rare that something like that would work. And so what needs to happen is the people need to stand up and say, this craziness of debt-backed money and what you're doing to our economy, you're robbing us blind, you're stealing our productive efforts, and we're not going to take it anymore. And if you don't back freedom's vision, then we're going to vote you out of office, basically, and we're going to implant people who do support it. And
I don't want to sound like a defeatist. But if the central banks are as powerful as you say, I just don't see how, even if you had a million people march on Washington for this cause, I just don't see how it could change anything. If they've got control of the Congress, they've got control of the executive branch. Is there an honest feeling in your heart that eventually you can change this, or it just seems like we're so far gone now that we just don't have a chance?
Right, which is a real. It's a Stockholm syndrome psychological feeling that you just expressed. Okay, everybody's been so victimized, you feel that they have all the power and that you have no control. That is not true, and I'm trying my best to write about why that's not true. Let me give you an example. I'll give you two examples of the swarm being effective. And the power of the swarm is that you get focused on these little objectives, and then you go in and you'll see how powerful it is and when it works. When an office gets attacked by and attacked is kind of a euphemism, but when they're approached by the swarm, it's an overpowerful thing. You probably don't know who Martin Armstrong is, but Martin Armstrong is a political prisoner within the United States. He was held in court in contempt for 7 years. He was put in solitary confinement and basically tortured into signing a confession. He was never accused of a crime. He was a businessman who ran Princeton Economics, real sharp man. I just don't know, can't say enough good things about how smart this guy is. From my perspective, definitely not a crook, but he went against the Goldman Sachs interests, and they wound up, through a judge, getting him held in contempt and never let him out, and he's still in prison. It's been over 10 years now that he's been in prison. He was put in a high security facility, and he's been writing papers and getting them out of prison and talking about these issues. And they put a known homicidal maniac in his cell with him, and the guy proceeded to beat him to death. In fact, he thought he killed him, but he survived it. And at any rate, he's in a prison now that's relatively safe in New York, and they were trying to illegally move him back into the same type of facility where he nearly got killed. And because they were doing it illegally, and because I write and talk about a lot of his economic concepts, and there are a ton of people who follow his writings, we basically said, you know, that's not going to happen. What you're doing is not right, and you are charged with taking care of this man while he is in prison, and you're not going to harm him, basically. And so I just blogged about it, and the next thing I knew, all the other people who write on the internet wrote about it as well, and we had literally in one day, we had thousands of people calling the Department of Prisons. They were faxing, they were calling, they were emailing. This all happened on a Saturday, and when the Federal Department of Prisons opened on Monday morning, the gal in charge of their media And the warden of the prison called Martin Armstrong in and simply said, please turn it off, make it stop. They agreed not to move him, and it happened in an instant. Okay, we literally shut them down. They could not function because so many people were demanding that they do the right thing. That is the power of the people. We have that power. All we have to do is stand up and demand that our elected representatives do the right thing. If they fail to do the right thing, then America is headed for some serious consequences, because I'll tell you that history shows that approximately 10 years after the collapse of credit, that bad events such as global war, revolution, things like that tend to follow collapses of credit. So if you go back and you look at World War II, what was occurring 10 years prior to World War II?
The Great Depression.
What was occurring 10 years prior to World War I? Okay.
That was the Federal Reserve getting... Oh, no, that was 1913. So, what was 10 years before? 1904? Was there a bank run then? The stock market crash?
Yeah, yes, there was the bank panic of 1907. You also had Weimar Germany, with the hyperinflation occurred just prior to that. You go back and look at what occurred prior to the Revolutionary War in the United States, and again, you had a depression that occurred about 10 years prior to that time. And so it's a debt. Debt is a destabilizing force for the world, and it leads to violence. It underpins a lot of history, and a lot of history is being made right now. So at any rate, what we did with Martin Armstrong was just one example. We had another victory where, in fact, the Secret of Oz movie was banned by Amazon.com, it was a really stupid thing on their part. They claimed that it was a non-family-friendly film and banned it. And what we learned is that Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon.com, is a designer of quant computer programs designed for the central bankers to take advantage of the marketplace, and that he basically is friends and involved in that whole central banker circle. And so
no wonder he didn't want it on there.
Yeah, exactly. And so, again, what we did was we wrote about the fact that it was banned, and we called him out on it. And we got literally, again, hundreds and thousands, not hundreds of thousands of people, but just a couple of thousand people writing in and demanding, we see your game here. What you're doing is not right. And if you don't do it, then we're going to start a boycott. We're not going to buy your products. And again, they capitulated. It took about a week in their case, and they rolled. And you can get The Secret of Oz off of Amazon.com today because of that. So it works. And
so
if
it
you
does
could,
work.
Oh, it works. Can you imagine being a politician and having a staff? And let's say that the swarm grows to be 100 or 200,000 people. Can you imagine you wouldn't even be able to get on a line? There's no way. I'm serious. How could they do work? And so we're kind of getting into an area where it's a different strategy. It's an interesting strategy. Sure. And it's just as simple as people demanding that they do the right thing. And so I encourage everybody to go to swarmusa.com and register. If you just register for the site, then you're registered for the swarm. And what we'll do is every day we simply send an email, or you can go to Swarm Central. You don't have to get an email. You can just go to Swarm Central every day. And every day I'm going to put up a target. So, for example, tomorrow we're targeting a blogger. Today we targeted a radio station that we want to get on air with. And we're just politely asking those people, hey, would you put Nate or Bill Still or one of the other Freedom's Visions guys on your show to talk about it so that we can grow the swarm. That's what we're trying to do now, is get the word out, get the size up, because it's just like Norman Schwarzkopf prior to invading Iraq, right? He didn't just take the first 10 troops that were there and start marching across the border. You have to mass your troops.
Right.
build the size up, and then you start working on the politicians. And that's what we're in right now. We're in that amassing phase and trying to build it bigger.
Okay. We're running out of time here. I have two more questions for you. I want to encourage everybody to go to swarmusa.com. I'm going to join. I'll join the swarm here after the show tonight. I encourage everyone to join, and let's see if we can actually make some change, elicit some change. One question I wanted to ask you before we got off was, if nothing happens, there is no change, everybody's efforts fail to try to make any change in the current system, how long do we have before a collapse?
Not long. I think the stock market could go at any time. I think another financial freeze-up is likely at any time. I can't pin it down exactly, but I do not give – our monetary system cannot continue to grow at the rate of growth that it is that it's doing. The debt and the government expenditures, the government deficits cannot continue on the path that they're on for very much longer. The math gets so bad so fast that if you look a decade out, it's completely impossible a decade from now. Completely impossible. So we're talking, you know, we're not talking about, and I've always said this, okay, you're not going to leave this mess to your grandchildren, okay? The mess is not going to make it that far.
Okay, so it's our problem. We have to deal with it now.
That's correct.
This is a little guilty pleasure question I wanted to ask you. I understand you were a pilot in the Air Force during Desert Storm.
Sure. Yep.
What did you fly?
I flew C-141 transports.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that great big airplane, flew them all over the world. Mm-hmm.
So were you bringing equipment and troops in and all that type of thing?
Yep, bullets, bombs, people, food, in and out. Did all that. I flew during the invasion of Panama when we went down and kicked Noriega out of Panama.
Right.
Very interesting job. It's a young man's game, though. And
hey, I want to thank you for your service to our country, and I want to thank you for what you do on your blog. Everybody who doesn't know, Nathan's blog is economicedge.blogspot.com. I'd love to have you on the show again here in a few months just to see if anything's changed, check out how the swarm is going, and see what we can do to affect some more positive change.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, John. And keep up the faith. We can affect change. Nobody else can but us. In fact, we're the ones that can do it. So appreciate that, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks for being on the show.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, let's move straight into our next guest. I went a little bit over on that one, so let's get straight in. We've got Tim from Old Grouch Military Surplus. Tim, are you there?
I'm here, John.
Hey, how are you today? Thanks for holding on.
I'm doing very good.
Went a little bit long there. I know a lot of people are listening right now, and they're like, wow, why is he having a surplus guy on? Like, what's going on with the surplus guy? Before we do that, I always like to get a little bit of background on my guests. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you got involved in the surplus business?
Okay. Well, I really grew up in it. It's a family business. And it all started with my father with a case of tomatoes. What happened was he was working for a commercial collection agency, and he got a call from a friend one day who ran a tomato packing house and said, hey, I have too many tomatoes. Why don't you come get some and you can sell them? And he thought it would be fun, so he went and got them and sold them at the flea market and made some money. And he said, well, I'll do this every weekend. It's good money. And he did that for about 2 years. And being in North Carolina, we have, at least at the time, we had a lot of textiles. So his job took him over to textile plants, and he got offered a bunch of T-shirts one day. And he said, well, I can sell these at the flea market too. And he quickly decided that T-shirts were better to sell than tomatoes because they didn't go bad. And we ate a lot of tomatoes when I was growing up when things didn't sell. We had a lot of foods that we had to get rid of fast. And he started selling T-shirts, and then he got some camouflage T-shirts, and he found out, wow, camouflage sells even better. And it all went from there. He started looking for sources, and it really is one of those American stories of, you know, just happened by chance. And then the company he was working for decided they were going to close their North Carolina branch and told him he could either move to Texas or he was out of a job, and he decided he wanted to do it full time. And 30 years later, we're here, and I've grown up in the business since I was about 12 years old.
And so you took it over from your dad?
I did. Well, he'll debate that because he's still in there every day.
Oh,
too. He's 73 and says he's never going to retire. But
okay. Well,
we're both
like
in there every day.
It was a case of the right opportunity at the right time with the right work ethic, it sounds like.
Definitely.
Now you were talking to me a little bit. One thing, let me stop and say this right now. You're actually going to have a sale for all Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, is that right?
That's right. For all the Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, for 1 week starting right now, on my website at oldgrouch.com, if you use the coupon code RFA when you check out, you'll get 10% off your entire order.
So there it is, everyone. If you wanted to get some good deals on some surplus stuff, you're going to get a free 10% off just for listening to Radio Free ARFCOM. Type in RFA in the coupon code. You'll get your 10% off. You were telling me that your business is cyclical.
It is. Surplus, it definitely runs a cycle where when something is new on the market, the military comes out with a new item, the price on that item initially will be high. Sometimes even because there are not many out, it will bring more than the government pays for it. Then as they start to filter on the market, that price will slowly drop. And then when the government decides they want to get rid of it or they decide it's obsolete, the market will be flooded briefly, and the price will really plummet. And it will stay low until the government runs out of ones to sell. And then if demand stays up, it'll either rise, or if it's something that got replaced by something better and the demand doesn't go up, then it'll stay flat or maybe rise a little bit. But there's a definite curve in prices, and if you're into surplus, it's best to try to time the market and buy when it's at that low part of the curve.
Okay. So what right now are some of the good buys? If people are looking for some good deals on surplus, what's good out there right now?
Right now, the military sleep systems, it's a three-part sleeping bag system that has two bags and a Gore-Tex cover, and you can wear them, you can use it anywhere from the summer down to about 40 below. And
oh, wow.
New those retail for about $600, and if you bought a commercial one comparable to it, it would be in that range. And right now, I sell used ones for $127 and new ones for $199 because the market is so flooded. In fact, just about 2 months ago, I was actually able to lower my price on those.
Oh, wow, that's a really good deal.
Another item is everybody has, this is AR15.com, everybody has AR15s, the Molly gear, the magazine pouches, the magazine bandoliers, and all that in woodland and three-color desert. Since the government is going away from those patterns, everything's being dumped, and it's all cheap right now. But in two more years or so, the supply is going to really dry up, and everybody will be saying, I should have bought it then.
Okay, that's interesting. And that's really appropriate for everybody here at AR15.com. One thing that's a hot topic, especially if you spend any time on the survival forum, which I do, I spend a lot of time on the survival forum. What's going on with the gas cans, the NATO gas cans? Those seem to have just disappeared completely. Are they gone forever and we're not going to see those again?
They're getting harder. The government passed a law that said all gas cans sold or manufactured in the U.S. or imported had to be the new California-approved, environmentally friendly, no spill, no vent design. And as a result, that has halted a lot of the imports. Now, some importers are bringing them in as oil cans and other things, and they're getting around some of that. But I think the best days of them are definitely behind us, and grab them while you can, because the importers are having more trouble finding them. A lot of them are unwilling to take the time to buy them and load them on a container if they're not sure they're going to clear customs. And it's getting much harder for me to find them. I've been promised some 10-liter cans in the next couple of weeks, but until I actually have them in my hands, I'm not going to go out and put them on the website or anything.
Okay. You were telling me a couple interesting stories about things that have actually been discontinued and aren't out there for different reasons. Camouflage netting, for example, you said that's completely discontinued now?
Well, you can get it commercially, and you can get imported stuff, but there's no more U.S. surplus netting being sold. They started shredding that actually about more than 10 years ago now because the DEA told the Department of Defense that too much marijuana was being grown under it.
Oh, wow.
So instead of selling it, and it always sold for a good price, the government got a good return on it, they actually throw it all in the shredder now.
Oh, wow. That's the DEA complained, and that was that, huh?
They did, and the used chemical suits, we used to get a lot of the, you know, guys in the military know the mop suit, the chemical suit. Those used to be sold once the expiration date had passed, even though if it had never been used. And then if you look online, you can find where the Department of Homeland Security went to Congress and said, we don't want these sold because we're afraid, number one, that terrorists will use them, and number two, that some first responders will get them when they're out outdated and think they're good and get injured. So that's another item that's all getting shredded now instead of being sold.
Oh, wow. Let's talk about some of your hot items right now. What's hot? What's in demand right now? What are people buying?
Sure. One of my hottest things right now are the first aid kits we sell. We've got a company here in North Carolina that puts them together for us. And that's an item, whether you're into military stuff or not. Every home and every car needs a good first aid kit. And we found that it's almost impossible to find a good supplier. Locally, I think we're the only ones in the county that offer anything bigger than a small $10 kit at the drugstore. And we get people from all over coming to buy our kits because we have everything from that small kit up to a large pack that would be a good base kit for an EMT basic or a military medic. And so those have sold very well for us. And I'm noticing more and more people coming in with a prepping mindset, getting ready for what's coming, getting ready for any kind of emergencies. As your previous guest noted, the financial collapse, they're coming in with those kinds of things in mind. And a lot of them don't really know what they're looking for. They just have this feeling that they need to start buying. And so I'm able to direct them to some of the things like the first aid kits.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people are starting to focus on being prepared for any type of bad situation that could come around. You don't only get U.S. military surplus stuff, but you also get some foreign surplus?
We do. We definitely do. And that's another thing that is somewhat cyclical because the stronger the dollar is, the more imported stuff we got. When the dollar's weak, we see a lot less coming in because the importers are actually sending the U.S. surplus overseas instead. But we get some really good deals in still, even then. We've got some Italian military backpacks right now that are a really good deal because they're under $50 and they're an Italian-made pack that's extremely rugged with a durable plastic frame. And it's comparable to our Molly pack, but it's not modular. It's all made in one system. So there's a lot less rattling going around.
Do you have any other foreign surplus that's a good deal right now?
The West German and East German entrenching tools are both good deals. The West German especially because it has a pick and it has a blade and it's push button activated instead of a screw like the U.S. ones were.
Those are foldable.
Those
are collapsible, those entrenching tools?
Yeah, they're collapsible. They fold up. And we have one good deal we have right now are East German backpacks. One of the good things about defeating the communists is we got to liquidate everything they had. And the East German backpacks are selling for $650 for a brand new little, it's a little day pack type pack, but it's good for kids, good for putting stuff in your car if you want to put stuff in the car or stuff like that.
Okay, another hot item that's talked about a lot on the survival forum are the wool blankets, the German wool blankets and the Italian wool blankets. Do you stock those?
I don't have any of the German or Italian right now. I just got a bunch of Israeli ones in yesterday, and they're going to be going on the website probably tomorrow.
How are those as far as quality?
They're really good quality. They're not as nice as the German ones were. I don't think I'll ever see any as nice as those German ones were. But they're definitely nice, and they're about the same size and about the same thickness. They're just a little bit coarser weave than those German ones were.
Okay. And then another thing we talked about was that you not only deal with U.S. military surplus, you don't only deal with foreign surplus, but you also get some commercial items as well.
We do. One of the big things that is a hot seller for us right now are the TruSpec 24/7 pants. I think most people are more familiar with the 511 tactical pants. And TruSpec took that design and that idea and made it into a better pair of pants, in my opinion. They've got more features. The waistband's better. Instead of being a pair of pants that was designed first for climbers and then the tactical community took over, like the 511s, TruSpec designed theirs from the ground up. One of the neat features is inside the cargo pocket, there are two smaller pockets on each side that are actually designed to hold AR-15 magazines. So you can slip four AR-15 magazines in your pocket and you can't even tell you've got them.
See, I didn't know that about the 511 pants that were designed off a climbing pant, huh?
Yeah, they were. The term 511 is actually a climbing term that says how difficult the climb is, their rating scale, and that's where that name actually came from.
Oh, okay. What other commercial items do you have right now that are hot sellers?
We're selling a lot of Multicam. Of course, Multicam is about to go official issue, but Multicam has always been a hot seller. We've got it in the ACU cut made by TruSpec. We've got the TruSpec jackets there, Dentex, which is essentially the same stuff as Gore-Tex under a new trade name. We're selling lots of 550 cord. It's military issue, but sold through the commercial distributors. And we're selling a good amount of the commercial bags, the TruSpec 3-day assault packs. We've got those multicam, coyote, ACU, and a few other colors. And the coyote brown seems to be the most popular color by far because it doesn't stand out as a camouflage, but it blends in very well.
You were talking a little bit about we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to touch on another thing. You were talking a little bit about how it's cyclical, and as things become older or as things get discontinued, then they're on the market. What do you see coming up here soon in the next couple, 3 months in the surplus industry that people would want to be looking for?
Keep an eye out still on the Molly gear, the Woodland and Desert. I've seen a lot of ACU come out. I'm looking to see, when the Army switches to multicam, I'm looking to see how much stuff gets sold off in ACU, if it does. Right now, they're not releasing any clothing because they have security concerns about it. Evidently, a few cases in Iraq where the enemy was found with U.S. issued clothing, but
can
buy that anyway, anywhere. So I don't see why cutting it off really was an effect that would do anything. It's hard to spot the trends more than a few weeks in advance because they don't publicize what's going to come on the sales until they actually post it.
Okay. Just to remind everyone, the website is oldgrouch.com. He's giving a 10% off for all Radio Free ARFCOM listeners. The coupon code for that is RFA. Let's talk a little bit about shipping real quick. How do your shipping prices work? Is it based on weight? Is it a flat rate shipping? How does that work?
It's based on weight. We ship FedEx Ground on almost everything, and we charge the actual shipping cost. We don't add a handling fee or anything else into it. So when you quoted shipping, that's exactly what FedEx is charging us. If there's something that's extremely lightweight, like a few of our NATO gas can gaskets or something, if you just put a note on the order that you'd like it shipped postal service, we'll do it, and we'll charge you the lower postal service rate when we process the order. And if it's going to Alaska, Hawaii, or to an APO, we'll definitely ship it post office. And one other thing we do offer is that for any of our troops overseas at an APO address, all the shipping to APOs is free.
Oh, free shipping for all troops at APO addresses. That's a really nice feature right there. Do you carry MREs?
We do. I don't have them on the website right now because, to be honest with you, I can't sell them cheap enough that I can compete with some of the guys that sell them online. But if you come to our walk-in store, we do have them. It's one of the things I do. If somebody has it cheaper online and I just can't compete, I'll just direct you to them instead of charging you the higher price.
It sounds good. Old Grouch Surplus. I want everyone to go to oldgrouch.com. He's got some fantastic deals there. Plus, you get your free 10% off for being a Radio Free ARFCOM listener. Thanks for being on with us. We'll get you back on in a few months and see how the cycle has turned and see what new things you have for us. How does that sound?
Sounds great, John. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. All right, let's get straight into our Get to Know segment for this week. One of the gorgeous ladies of ARFCOM, Femme Gun Girl, agreed to be on with us, and we'll get straight to that right now on Radio Free ARFCOM. This week on Get to Know, I have a very special guest. One of the gorgeous ladies of ARFCOM agreed to come on and do a Get to Know segment with us. It is Femme Gun Girl. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. How
okay.
are you?
I'm doing good. Without further ado, let's dive straight into the questions. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, question number one, 9mm or 45?
I have no idea how you can choose between the two. I say both, but I do shoot 9mm more often.
Okay. The ARFCOM answer, get both. I love it. Question number two, beans or no beans?
Well, I won't know till I try Zhukov's chili recipe, but I've got to say I really don't eat that much chili. So I really don't have a very good response for you because I'm not a huge chili eater.
Wow. Okay. So we'll leave that one. Have you ever made chili ever?
Yes. Yeah, I'm a good cook, so I've made a lot of different things.
Did you put beans in it or not?
Yes, I did.
Okay, then your answer, we're going to have to put beans down for you.
Okay, then.
Okay, question number three. Glock 1911 or something else?
Oh, both. But the Glock is slightly easier for me to shoot during a long-range session, so I guess slightly towards Glock.
Okay, fair enough. You're being very politically correct here, I see. Question four, married, in a relationship, or single?
Married, with children.
Oh, okay. And does your husband approve of your shooting and all that? Does he participate with you?
Yes, he absolutely approves. He's not as good as me, I think.
What about your kids? Do they shoot? Are they old enough?
No, not old enough.
Not old enough yet. Okay. What do you do for a living?
Well, currently I'm a student struggling to make it through grad school.
Oh, okay. What are you getting your degree in?
Oh, environmental science.
And what's the goal after that, after you get that degree?
Probably work for an evil corporation.
Okay.
Because, I mean, there's really not too many choices. You either go for the tree hugger route, or you go for the evil corporation Enron route.
Or you go the government route.
Yeah, and I don't really like that route, so.
Good for you. Okay, if you're settling in on a Friday evening for a nice little session of ARFCOMing, what is your drink of choice?
Whiskey sour. Made the classic and the right way.
Who is your favorite poster on ARFCOM, or one of your favorite posters?
Well, conservative Black Femme. XCR, the girls mainly, but I also like Army Infantry's threads and Screech Jet's posts too.
Who was that, the last one you said?
Screech Jet.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, so, wow, you named some good people there. Who is your least favorite poster on RFCOM?
Toss up between Matiba or Mr. Clean for Hire.
Oh, wow. Really?
Bad shovelhead.
Okay. Who is your favorite mod or site staff?
Maynard, although VA Gunnett is nice, too.
Okay. I like VA, too. Maynard, I have not had a lot of interaction with, but I'm sure he's a good guy nonetheless. If you could live anywhere other than the frigid place you live now, where would that be?
Hawaii, since it's so beautiful, and I've never been there.
Okay, Hawaii. That's a good answer. At least it wasn't Texas, which I seem to get a lot of people say Texas. What is your favorite firearm that you currently own?
Ridley Bear Thunder Ranch.
Excuse me?
The Ridley Bear Thunder Ranch.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's a good answer. I did not expect that. I really did not expect that.
Wow,
if you
I'm
could,
full of surprises.
You are full of surprises. You are. If you could have any one firearm that's legal for you to own that you do not currently own, what would that be?
It would be the LMT MRP.
The LMT MRP. Okay, good answer, yes. When was the last time you actually went shooting?
Wednesday.
Talk the talk, walk the walk. We love that at ARFCOM. We definitely do. Do you get to go shooting a lot?
Do I get to go shooting a lot? I try to as much as I can, if my schedule allows it. I generally try to go during ladies' nights, and I'm usually one of the few ladies there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, ladies' night's a great idea for a range. Have you ever met a fellow ARFCOMer in real life?
Yes.
And who was it? Or was it a bunch?
Get-together.
Go ahead.
It's only one person. It was Zoinks. And he was super nice and super smart.
So we've got mixed reviews on people meeting ARFCOMers in real life, but most of them have actually been positive. What is your favorite non-GD section of the forums?
Oh, that's easy, CNR.
Oh, the CNR section, yeah, okay. What was the very first firearm that you ever shot?
The Makarov, baby.
A Makarov was the first? Wow, you are full of surprises. When was it? Was it your dad that got you into that, or what was the story behind that?
No, it was a friend who got me into it. My parents didn't know anything about firearms, But yeah, I've always loved the Makarov.
Yeah, that's a cool first gun to shoot. So far, our last two have been a 12 gauge and a Makarov. That's cool. Have you ever gotten rid of a firearm and regretted it?
Yes, I did get rid of a SPR.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. What'd you do? You sold it, and then you were like, "Oh man, why did I do that?"
Yeah, I really I needed the money, but I totally regret it because I love the rifle. So.
Okay, tell me a little bit about your avatar before we get off here. Is that you?
It's a self webcam shot. I was just experimenting with changing from my old one, and it was one of the few that fit the size requirements. So many people commented, and so yeah, I decided to keep it up rather than continue to look for another one.
Last question before I let you go here. If you were elected President of the United States, what would be the first thing you did as president?
I'd remove the 1986 NFA executive order and order the BATF to reexamine the sporting clause of the 1968 Gun Control Act so more firearms could qualify to be imported.
Machine guns for everybody.
I think that is a really good idea.
So do I.
I have no idea how anybody could be so against machine guns.
Me neither. I love it. Well, hey, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day. I know how busy you are to join us here on a Get to Know, and I'm sure everyone else enjoyed it as much as I do. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking with you.
That was Fem Gun Girl on this week's Get to Know. If you haven't checked out her Babe of the Day pictures, go check them out in the BOTD forum. I think you'll be very, very happy with it. Next week, we'll have another good Get to Know, maybe two. Just depends on who I can wrestle in or twist their arm to get them to come on. If you want to be on a Get to Know, feel free to just send me an IM, and I'll get back in touch with you, and we'll throw you on a Get to Know segment. You can voice your opinion on beans or no beans, 9mm or 45. Our next guest coming up, he works for the NRA ILA grassroots organizing group, Brent Gardner. Brent, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing outstanding. It's really good to have you on today.
It's a pleasure to be on.
We appreciate it. For everyone who doesn't know, can you talk a little bit about what you do for the NRA and what the NRA grassroots program is all about?
Sure. Well, I know you guys probably have a ton of NRA members listening tonight, and what we do as a function of NRA ILA grassroots is working with members to be able to help with electoral and legislative efforts on behalf of NRA throughout the year. Basically what that means is we help organize our members, we help train them, and we help place them to be able to impact firearms law and to try and help do things right the first time by electing pro-gun candidates in the first place. So I coordinate several programs for NRA ILA that tries to help accomplish those things, and throughout the year we put on workshops and speak to NRA members, gun owners, and members of your community about the issues that are important.
Okay, it sounds interesting. What are a couple of the big things you guys are pushing right now that we should be aware of?
Well, I guess probably the first thing I should talk about are some of the things that NRA ILA grassroots has institutionalized to try and help members get more involved. You know, if they're listening tonight or they're a member of your community, they understand the importance of our Second Amendment. And NRA has a few programs that I kind of want to let everyone know about that are available and out there for them to get involved with. The first one's our NRA ILA Frontlines Volunteer Program. This is for some of our most dedicated volunteers. These are people that are truly committed to the Second Amendment, and they would participate in a lot of the activities that we do that help keep our organization strong, and it helps keep us in a position to be able to help impact legislation and help get people elected. There's some great things. People that are NRA ILA Frontlines members will get our up-to-the-date legislative alerts, which I'm sure many of you who've signed up before at gun shows already receive. But also, for instance, when we travel in through the states, put on workshops, hold dinners, try and put together networking, get people out there to meet pro-gun candidates and get involved in our efforts, that's the best way for us to be able to get a hold of folks and let them know that we're participating in these activities and get them out there to get involved. And the best way to sign up for that is going to be online at our website. I'll mention it again at the end, but NRAILA.org. And under the Get Involved Locally section, people can sign up there for our Frontlines Volunteer Program. The next one is our Election Volunteer Coordinator Show. You guys have Joe DeBurgulis on quite a bit, right?
Every week.
Excellent. Well, Joe is actually, he's one of our EVCs, and we have one in every congressional district. We have vacancies across the country just at different times. But these EVCs serve as a link between NRA headquarters and our volunteers outside in the community, and they help organize a lot of our grassroots efforts as far as contacting legislators on important bill measures. They help by educating the community, and they help especially during election season as far as organizing our grassroots community to be able to get out there and advocate for pro-gun candidates. And I'm sure everyone out there understands and knows, especially in the climate that we are right now, the importance of these election cycles, and 2010 is definitely a big one. If you want to find out who your EVC is or if there is one in your area, again, that's available at the website under the Take Action section. Get involved locally. All people will do is put in their zip code, and they can find out who that person is locally and get involved directly. One other program I wanted to mention is for business owners out there. We have our Second Amendment Activist Centers. This program allows businesses that are pro-gun, they don't necessarily have to be gun-related, generally speaking, those people get the most out of it. They sign up to become one of our Second Amendment Activist Centers. And what this means is that throughout the year, periodically, we will send them NRA ILA-related materials, either materials on candidates, some of our legislative efforts, just different things that we're involved in. What we do then is we place the information of that business up on our website. We send information on that business out to all of our members in the area, which is free publicity. We send it out to every NRA member in that business's immediate area, letting them know that this is somewhere they can go to find NRA materials. It was great. I was listening to some of your old shows before, and I heard a couple of different folks get on there that were talking about products that they sold. And, you know, it's important. They understand the fact that communities like AR15.com and like the NRA community, when we hear that they're out there supporting the things that we believe in, they come in and they shop in those companies and they buy their goods. And so it's important for us to be able to provide that to folks who are supporters of the NRA, to give them that free advertisement to help drive them there. And it also puts a place in the local community for distributing NRA ILA materials. So that's kind of three big programs that we have going right now. The last one I want to talk about before, you know, you have questions or anything more specifically you'd like to get into is our NRA University program. This is one of the fastest growing programs that we have in our grassroots division. There's tons of excitement. Every single time we hold one, we wind up filling it up completely and unfortunately having to turn some folks away in some instances. NRA University is a 2 to 3 hour program focused on college students, reminding ourselves that the future is going to be pretty bleak for gun owners if we don't get the younger generation involved. Fortunately, what we've found in NRA ILA grassroots is that this younger generation is primed for it. And NRA University goes around to colleges and universities. We also hold them at NRA headquarters in Fairfax. We just got done with one at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Uh-huh. And students come in and they learn how to be able to improve their techniques, to learn to improve their skills, to be able to advocate on behalf of gun issues. And this program is wildly popular. It's very successful, and it's something that there's more demand for than we can actually meet right now. So that's kind of the three programs that we have. I know there are some other things that we talked about, wanted to discuss during this program, but it's up to you. Where do you want to go next?
I just wanted to touch a little bit about the business program that you had, and I think it's important that everyone realize, as a gun owner and as a Second Amendment rights activist, I think it's important we stick together and we support the businesses that support us. I was so glad you brought that up, because it doesn't get brought up enough on this show, that gun owners, we're a tight-knit organization, and yet there might be some arguing amongst us at times, but if you come at us from the outside, we're going to band together and we're going to stick together, and it's important that we support businesses that support the Second Amendment.
Absolutely true, John. That's a great point to make and reiterate.
One thing I wanted to ask you about is I saw on the NRA ILA website that you guys need volunteers for the 2010 annual meetings in Charlotte. How does that work, and what would the type of job that would someone be doing there for that if they volunteered?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a myriad of jobs that would be out there. They're doing everything from membership folks, helping people get signed in, to ILA has folks that are volunteering to help man booths and distribute information. There's a whole wealth of opportunities, and the best thing for someone to do if they want to find out more would be to go on to NRAAM.com, the NRA annual meeting website, volunteer, and they can contact folks actually who are involved with coordinating those volunteers, and try and find out more about something that might kind of fit with what they're interested into. But listen, NRA's annual meeting is an incredible event. If you haven't been before, everyone should try and make it at least once, and if possible, make it every year. Is it possible to talk a little bit about what Grassroots is doing
at
annual meeting?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we've got two big programs that we do every year, and they're usually standing room only, but it's something I recommend for anyone who is going to be at annual meeting or can be at annual meeting to check out. The first one is our annual NRA Election Action Workshop, and it's held every year. It's an absolutely fantastic program. It really helps teach some of our members how to become better advocates. Listen, we're all completely sound in our beliefs and our understandings on the Second Amendment. But one of the things that we don't always do very well is articulate that and find a way to be able to present that to others. And it's not enough for us to focus inward in our community. We have to learn how to reach out and make ourselves as effective as possible. So that's a workshop that I really recommend. The other one is our In Their Own Words panel, and this is one that I really hope people will come out and see. As a matter of fact, Joe DeBurgolis is actually going to be speaking this year. And this In Their Own Words program is a collection of some of our top activists. They are EBCs, they are volunteers, and they're members of our state associations. And this is an opportunity for them to talk about real-life experiences that they've had and the things that have helped make them successful, and even talk about things that we really need to improve on as a Second Amendment community. So that's another great program that I really hope folks will come out and check out. But annual meeting is a ton of fun, and I hope everyone will come out and check it out.
That's really interesting. I've never been to an annual meeting. Aside from the workshops that you talked about, and just as a reminder to everyone, the annual meeting is May 14th through the 16th in Charlotte, North Carolina. What are some of the other things? Is it you get to hear speeches from the top NRA people? You get to go to workshops and that type of thing. What type of experience is it for the average NRA member or just a gun owner? You don't have to be an NRA member to go, right?
Correct. NRA members are allowed to enter free, and people that want to enter can become NRA members right on the spot, and they're able to come in. We also have our American Values Summit, which is fantastic. We have some of the biggest names from around the industry. I mean, just about every year, Ted Nugent's there. This year, just recently announced, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin will be giving a speech there. And, of course, we hear from the folks inside our Second Amendment community who are really on the front lines and the upper echelons of trying to put together the strategy that we need to fight off the folks who, quite frankly, want to take away our guns. You'll hear from folks like Chris Cox. You'll hear from Wayne LaPierre. And you'll hear from other folks within our community and from outside of our community who stand by us and support us on a day-to-day basis.
I love it. Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a really good time this year at the national meetings. A couple of independent state issues I wanted to talk to you with while we still have a couple of minutes.
Sure.
There's a thing in Pennsylvania right now. I talked about it on the very first RFA program we had way back in January. But there is and I don't understand it completely, but there's a lost or stolen gun ordinance that's being debated and talked about there in Pennsylvania. Do you know much about this situation?
I'll tell you, this is an awful, awful situation. It's in the borough of Hatboro. The council wanted to consider a resolution that would recommend to the state legislature that if a gun owner fails to report a lost or stolen firearm, that they would face possible fines and imprisonment. Here's the biggest, really just awful situation here, is that these folks believe that not only is it enough that this person who's already facing victimization of crime, of having their firearm stolen, they might then become a criminal, unwittingly. They might become a criminal. It's atrocious that a government entity would feel that this is an acceptable way to put forth business. So certainly we obviously oppose that, and we certainly hope that it won't happen, but there's no reason to turn law-abiding gun owners into criminals because they were victimized by theft.
No, it's an asinine policy. And this is a place called the Borough of Swarthmore, is that correct?
I had Borough of Hatboro, I believe, but Swarthmore may also as well. I'd have to look back at that. Grassroots coordinators like myself have 16 states. I have 16 states in the District of Columbia. So Pennsylvania is one that belongs to one of my colleagues, but I know on the website it does speak about Hatboro for sure.
Okay, I'm reading the website now. It does say Swarthmore as well. The borough of Swarthmore may table the lost or stolen ordinance. So if you're in Pennsylvania, contact go to the NRAILA.org website, click on the grassroots, go down to Pennsylvania, and you'll see a little story about this. Contact the mayor, contact the city council there. Let's see what we can do to make sure this thing disappears, because this will set a very, very bad precedent. Let's get started and catch this fire going around the country. It's just an awful situation. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to talk about, we're almost out of time here. I can't believe how fast the time's gone today. You do have a Facebook and some online social networking presence?
About NRA ILA Grassroots, we have social networking presence in pretty much all the major ones. We have a Facebook group for NRA. We have a Facebook group for NRA ILA. Our NRA University program has a very active Facebook account, and one of the things that is really popular that we have is our NRA ILA Grassroots News Minute, and that's on YouTube. It comes out weekly. We have updates on legislative events and on NRA ILA activities. It's a video. It usually lasts somewhere between 2 and 3 minutes, and it's got some of the biggest stories that we have out there. It's about to go under a big revamp. It's looking great right now, but it's going to look even better coming up, so I encourage everyone to go to the NRA ILA page on YouTube. Check it out.
And that's hosted by you, correct?
It is. It's hosted by myself and Krista Kopp, who is another one of our coordinators, and we do our best every week to bring you the biggest stories that are out there and keep you up to date.
I love it. Hey, Brent, I really want to thank you for taking some time out, being with us on the show today, let everybody understand just exactly what the NRA is doing for us and our right to keep and bear arms. I appreciate the work you've done. I encourage everybody, go to the NRAILA.org website, go to the grassroots section, check it out. There's always something you can do to help our cause. And I'm talking to all the individual listeners out there. There's always something each of us can do. And I think the grassroots NRA ILA grassroots programs really hit that home.
Well, I appreciate that, John. I'm just going to echo your sentiment. There's no time like the present. The NRA and other grassroots organizations are out there working on behalf of gun owners, and definitely this is an all-hands-on-deck effort. If we don't all come together, it's going to be gone before we know it, and hopefully your members of your community, if they're interested, feel free to contact me. I'll give out my email address. If you're interested in getting involved in any of the programs we talked about tonight, or have ideas or are interested in participating at the local level where you are, feel free to contact me. It's B. Gardner, B-G-A-R-D-N-E-R, at nrahq.org. So thanks so much for having me on.
Outstanding, Brent. I appreciate it. We'll have you on again here in a few months, and we'll talk about some more grassroots things.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Okay. That was Brent Gardner from the NRA ILA Grassroots organization. Now we're almost out of time. I can't believe how fast the show went this week. We're going to have a special Going Galt segment. It's a pre-recorded interview that Matt Hoffman did, and it's all about Going Galt. He's interviewing a guy who has actually lived the Going Galt philosophy and practiced Going Galt for over 30 years. So I better get straight to it, or we're not going to have enough time to listen to the whole thing. Here it is, this week's Going Galt with Matt Hoffman.
Not long after last Monday's broadcast, we had an unexpected but much welcomed surprise in the Going Galt thread in the team forum. A member, who goes by the handle JeffersMZ, introduced himself by saying that he started Going Galt in 1977 and hasn't looked back since. The information that followed in that post and the ones after it were saturated with brilliant pieces of information, the kind that weren't ideas derived from research, but facts derived from experience. JeffersMZ obviously has a lot of information, knowledge, and experience we could all take some valuable lessons from. So, without further ado, it's my distinct honor and privilege to welcome to the Going Galt segment, ARFCOMer, JeffersMZ. Welcome to the show, sir.
Pleased to be here.
Glad to have you, Jeff. Now, I'm really delighted to have you on our program today, because almost immediately after listeners begin expressing a desire to have some sort of guide, a syllabus for how to go Galt, you showed up and shared your knowledge with us, gained from over 30 years of experience. So, one day, Jeff, you just decided to go Galt. What was it that caused you to make this decision?
I had read Atlas Shrugged my junior year in high school. So I really went galt from the very beginning of my working life. I believed that a tax system based on income discourages productivity, while other types of tax systems encourage productivity and savings as well. In essence, I decided to give them exactly what they seem to want. They're going to penalize me for producing. Why would anyone produce for them?
They're going to give them exactly what they want. It sounds like nothing.
That's what they seem to be asking for.
Indeed. Now, when you first started going galt, you must have faced the same confusion many of us are right now in trying to decide how best to start. How did you determine what methods to implement and in what areas to start going galt?
I started my working life knowing that working for currency was a trap. Instead, I decided to earn just barely enough money to meet my hard currency needs and then spend the rest of my time producing the things I wanted or needed directly, things that others pay for with cash. The only confusion I ran into was figuring out each problem as it arose. The first one was how to earn a certain amount of money and then stop when I had enough to purchase the thing I couldn't make myself without messing up my career. The solutions came one at a time over years. It's not an end goal. It's a process that never ends. The longer you live, the more skills you have time to acquire. And if you direct your efforts properly, each new skill reduces your needs for taxable income.
Okay, so it sounds like you pretty much started working from a young age with the principles of going galt in mind. Now, as I'm sure you know, life situations for RFCOMers are very widespread. Some married, some single, some with dependents, some without, so on and so forth. Do you think that there would need to be a different approach for each person depending upon their current life situation? Or do you think that the information you outlined to go galt can be universally applied to everyone, no matter what their current situation is?
Some of the techniques may be different, and some may be universal. I think every person's situation is going to be different. What works for one person may not work for another. Each person knows what his basic needs and wants are. Out of those needs, he knows what his limitations are today, what he can do for himself, and what he needs to pay someone else to do for him. Given time, he can pick up additional skills that he needs and adjust the balance in ways that work for his situation. Every dollar he doesn't earn is one more dollar he can't be taxed on.
Now, one of the biggest things that hold people back from going galt is their mortgage obligation. They need to earn the money so they can pay for the roof over their family's heads. Is it possible to achieve great strides in going galt while still under a mortgage? And if so, how? Or if not, how do you think one could essentially get on the fast track to get out from under a mortgage?
Getting out from under a mortgage is going to be more difficult than getting into a smaller mortgage in the first place. Or better yet, organizing your life so you never take a mortgage at all. Getting out from under a mortgage is probably a little more difficult than we have time to go into detail for tonight, but there are methods.
Okay.
About
all
two-thirds
right.
of my working life was in the construction field. I saved a large percentage of the cost of my dream home by doing the work myself. In addition, the high turnover in construction jobs gives you the flexibility to earn the money you need to pay others for goods and services you can't provide for yourself, and then quit the hourly job and spend the rest of that year working directly for the things you want, bypassing the currency middleman and bypassing the tax man. Any flexible, high-turnover industry will give you this flexibility, but construction also gives you the knowledge you need to legally avoid income tax on the single largest purchase most people ever make, their home. Even if you are under a mortgage now, you can still learn to service your own vehicles, make your own furniture. In short, stop giving away half your effort in income tax and start working directly for what the cash would purchase. Again, every dollar you don't earn is one more dollar you won't pay tax on. When you work for money, you take home 30 minutes worth of benefit after taxes. When you work for yourself, you take home the full hour in benefit.
Now, actually, you had mentioned that you read Atlas Shrugged in high school, I believe it was, you said. And on top of that, you mentioned that you've spent about two-thirds of your working life in construction. It actually kind of leads into a question I have, and it is, how important is having a college-level education to one's ability to go GALT. Is this effort something that would be more dependent upon book smarts or street smarts?
I think a college degree involves some trade-offs. In essence, the degree shows other people what you can do. In the truest GALT sense, you already know what you can do, and since you've stopped working for taxable income and started working for yourself, what other people think doesn't really matter. On the other side of that same coin, a degree will increase your cash income per hour so you can meet your needs quicker and get back to work for yourself quicker. I think the balance between those two opposing ideas can be found within the education you choose itself. Not so much what your sheepskin says, but more important, what you know how to do. If you can combine a practical education that allows you to provide your own needs, along with a degree that earns cash quicker, freeing you up to pursue your own dreams, I think you found the best of both equations.
Now, you made mention when I asked you about mortgages that one of the easiest ways is to not get into a big mortgage in the first place, but a lot of people who only recently decided to work at Going GALT have come from situations where they didn't know such a possibility existed or just accepted the status quo integration into the rat race of society. For these people, one major question dominates their mind. Is it ever too late to go GALT? Is there ever a point in one's life, be it age, financial situation, location, career aspiration, or other factors that make it impossible for the person to succeed at going GALT?
No, it's never too late to stop working for taxable income and start working for yourself. The parasites tend to multiply over time. Somewhat honest people see other people getting over on the system, and then they become parasites themselves. They need every dollar you can earn, and they play up on your insecurities, telling you you have to have this car or live in that ritzy neighborhood in order to succeed. They do this so that more of them can ride for free on your hard work. If you do no more than pick up a hobby of leathercraft and make your own wallet, saving $10 that you now don't have to earn and be taxed on, that's $10 no looter will ever benefit from. They're in this for the gravy, so each tax dollar you deny them comes right out of their disposable income, their pleasure money. The less pleasant their existence, the sooner they will get tired of scraping and never enjoying life, and the sooner they will stop looting and go back to work themselves.
It's interesting you say it. It's interesting you say that, because I believe it was Ben Franklin who actually said that the best thing we can do for the poor and destitute is make it as uncomfortable for them as possible so that they will do exactly that. Now, finally,
Ben Franklin had a better way with words than I do, but that is the essence of the thought.
Now, my last question for you, Jeff, and I know this is essentially a summary of everything that you've already presented, but what small changes can our listeners begin implementing right away and stick with for the long run that will have an immediate impact on their efforts to go GALT?
Well, there's two things. One, you want to start with planning. Look at what you have to buy with earned taxable income and look at what you can do for yourself. Can you change the oil in your car? Build your own computer from old parts? Take a look at what your big expenses are and what skills you need to do some or all of that yourself. Look at which skills you can acquire quickly and easily and which ones may require longer to achieve proficiency. Really, the first step is making the commitment to bypass the income tax scam by working for yourself. Once you approach every day with that attitude, your basic desire to get ahead takes you day by day, year by year, closer to self-sufficiency, denying the parasites more and more of your effort and productivity. It starts with the attitude, and then it's a matter of solving each small problem one by one the rest of your life.
It sounds like the motto, as you've repeated through the interview, has been every dollar you don't earn is a dollar that you're not taxed on.
That is correct. So you double your own income by working for yourself, and you deny the looters half of your income by working for yourself.
Very nice. Well, Jeff, again, we want to sincerely thank you for your time, your wisdom, and helping our listeners begin to walk that long path that is the effort of going GALT. Now, in the same breath, I must apologize to you and our listeners for having a scheduling conflict that prevented this from being a live segment, so we could perhaps take questions from a few callers. Actually, Jeff, if the opportunity allows in the future, would you be willing to come back on as a guest with more information and to take a few questions from our listeners?
Of course. I think everyone can and should be doing this, and I want to help any way I can. The fundamental nature of any tax based on productivity is counterproductive. It's a penalty for working, and history shows that cultures that reward hard work advance faster than those who penalize hard work. It's long past the time that all of us shrug and get these looters off our backs. They are a perversion of the basic laws of nature, and their greed and laziness are holding us all back.
Jeff, I can't begin to thank you enough for taking time out of your day to share your pearls of wisdom with us. That'll do it for this week's segment. John, we hand the reins of Radio Free ARFCOM back over to you.
And that was an outstanding going golf second for Matt Hoffman. Segment from Matt Hoffman. I can't believe there's actually a guy that's been living this for 30 years, and he has some great advice for everyone out there. We're out of time for today. I want to thank all the ARFCOMers out there listening. Don't forget, if you're an NRA member, the NRA elections are right now. They're going on right now this month. Check out in the news and announcements forum for the AR-15 endorsed candidates. Don't forget, oldgrouch.com military surplus is giving all Radio Free ARFCOM listeners 10% off until the end of this week. Coupon code RFA. NRAILA.org, grassroots, get involved. Get a young kid involved in shooting. We need to make sure the right to keep and bear arms stays with us for future generations. Also, check out swarmusa.com for the financial freedoms activist. And also, I want to thank everybody that posted links in the discussion threads today. Next week, Old Painless will be back with a box of truth. He took a vacation this week. We will have Tom from Spikes Tactical on. And also Senate candidate John Wayne Tucker. If you don't know who he is, just Google him up real quick. He's the Senate candidate that did a commercial holding his AR-15. So we'll be back to guns next week. And I just want to say on the way out, God bless America.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.